Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday afternoon. Ari Berman is our guest this hour. Has a very interesting piece in The Nation titled, "The GOP's War on Voting is Working. Wisconsin and Minnesota are case studies in the differences between Republican and Democratic votes." He outlines Wisconsin's strict new voter ID law that went into effect in 2016. He tells stories of several people who found it very difficult to vote. In Minnesota, on the other hand, in 2011, the Republican-controlled legislature passed a strict voter ID bill. The governor, a Democrat, Dayton, vetoed it. The Republicans responded by putting a constitutional amendment requiring photo ID on the 2012 ballot. 80% of Minnesota people supported the law, 64% of Democrats before voting, but a huge grassroots effort changed those numbers significantly, and it did not pass. So what's going on? What are the differences in Wisconsin and in the state of Minnesota? How hard is it for people to vote? Ari has written about this extensively. He's senior contributing writer for The Nation magazine, a fellow at The Nation Institute, and author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. He's written about American politics, civil rights, and his stories have appeared in the New York Times, Rolling Stone, The Guardian. He's a frequent television guest, and he's also on NPR frequently. His first book was Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics, that published in 2010. We're going to be welcoming phone calls this hour as we talk about voting. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And Ari, thank you for being with us. Hello.
Hey, Kathleen.
Hi,
thank
Ari.
You for having me back.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us. How hard was it for people? You outlined stories that are really kind of heartbreaking in Wisconsin of how hard it was for many people to comply with this photo ID law. People had to spend a lot of money, had to track down birth certificates. You wonder how many people just gave up.
Yeah, so people did have a lot of problems voting in Wisconsin during the April primary, which was the first time that the new voter ID law went into effect. And I was in Wisconsin observing many of these stories, and then I did some reporting afterwards about that. But just to give you a few stories, one story that I told was a man by the name of Eddie Lee Holloway Jr. He was someone who moved from Illinois to Wisconsin, voted without problems, but then needed to get a photo ID for voting. And so he went to the DMV and he brought his Illinois photo ID, which was expired, along with his birth certificate and his Social Security card to try to get a free photo ID, and his application was rejected because the name on his birth certificate read Eddie Jr. Holloway instead of Eddie Lee Holloway Jr. Because of a clerical error. So same first name, same last name, but slightly different middle name due to this clerical error. And he was told that he would have to go downtown to the Vital Records office to be able to amend his birth certificate. When he went down to the Vital Records office in Milwaukee, he was told that it would cost between $400 and $600.
Oh my gosh, really?
To amend his birth certificate. And this was a story that he gave under oath in a federal voting rights deposition, I should mention. He was a 58-year-old man, African-American man, who had moved from Illinois to Milwaukee. So then what the Vital Records office in Milwaukee said was that he had to go to Illinois, where he was from, to amend his birth certificate. He then bought a bus ticket to go back to Illinois. He spent $200 on a bus ticket. He went back to Illinois. He went to the Vital Records office there. They said that to amend his birth certificate, he needed to bring both his high school and his vaccination records, which was crazy. So he went back to he went from Springfield, the capital of Illinois, back to his hometown of Decatur, Illinois. He got his high school records. He went back to Springfield, the state capital, and they said he needed to show his long-form Social Security statement, which he did not have. So he went back to Wisconsin without getting the documentation he needed in Illinois. Once he was back in Wisconsin, he once again called the Vital Records office in Illinois and was told that he would have to go back and appear in person to be able to amend his birth certificate to get a photo ID for voting in Wisconsin. The net effect of this was that this one man, Eddie Lee Holloway Jr., made seven trips to different public agencies in two different states, spent $200, brought three different forms of ID to the DMV in Milwaukee, and still was not able to vote in the primary in Wisconsin in 2016. And these are the kind of stories that I've been telling, both in my article and more broadly in my reporting.
They're really heartbreaking. And you also include, there's such a huge political element here, but Congressman Glenn Grothman, who's now in the U.S. Congress, was asked about why he thought the Republicans were going to take Wisconsin in 2016. And his answer, and I saw it on TV that night, was photo ID.
That's what he said. He said, well, what's going to be different about this election? Why are you going to win this election when you've lost the presidential election in a bunch of different cycles? And he said, well, now we have the photo ID law. And there's some context to this. First off, there were some really explosive revelations that came in a recent voting rights trial that got a lot of press in Wisconsin. Todd Alba, who was a former chief of staff to Dale Schultz, one of the last remaining moderate Republicans in the legislature who retired in 2014, said that in the closed-door meeting when Republicans were considering the voter ID law, Republican senators were basically saying they want to, quote, target neighborhoods around Milwaukee and student voters in the state. So basically they wanted to target overwhelmingly African-American areas in places like Milwaukee, and they wanted to target student voters, both of which tend to vote heavily Democratic. And Dale Schultz, Alba's boss, got up and said, we need to not think about how this is going to help our party. We need to think about the effect that this photo ID law is going to have on the voting rights of Wisconsinites in the state. And he was quickly shut down by then State Senator Glenn Grothman, who said, well, what I'm concerned about is winning. He said, we need to get this done when we have the opportunity. And then subsequently, Grothman also supported a bill that eliminated early voting on nights and weekends, which was used a lot in Democratic areas like Milwaukee and Madison. And he said he wanted to, quote, nip early voting in the bud before it spread from these heavily Democratic cities to more rural areas. And so I think there's some context for recent statements by Republicans that are basically admitting that these laws are being passed to try to benefit them politically.
Mm-hmm. And for those who are interested, we had Todd Alba on our air on May 31st. If you want to listen to the interview with him, it was quite revealing. On the other hand, we do have a Republican member of Congress, Jim Sensenbrenner, who really has introduced legislation to, in a form, reauthorize voting rights, and he's a Republican.
Yeah, but Jim Sensenbrenner has been fighting a losing battle on this issue. So I think Sensenbrenner is one of those Republicans that I think really believes in the Republican Party being the party of Lincoln. When he was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee in 2006, he led the effort to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act. And in fact, today is the 10-year anniversary of that vote in 2006 when the House voted 390-33 to restore the Voting Rights Act for another 25 years. But then in 2013, the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act. They ruled that those states with the longest histories of discrimination had to approve their voting changes with the federal government. They said that that was no longer necessary any longer. Sensenbrenner was one of the few Republicans that actually criticized that decision. And he's introduced legislation in Congress to try to restore parts of the Voting Rights Act. But this time around, only 14 congressional Republicans have signed on to his bill. So we have a situation where 10 years ago the Voting Rights Act was reauthorized by a vote of 390-33 in the House, with Sensenbrenner leading the way, but now he can only get 14 members of his party to sign on to his bill. And I think that's a sad commentary about what's happened to the Republican Party on voting rights.
Let's go to Minnesota for a moment. I had no idea that this grassroots effort took place to completely change the minds of people in Minnesota who initially had supported the law, the constitutional amendment requiring photo ID. This is part of your story, and it's quite remarkable. Were minds ever changed there, weren't they?
Yeah, it was really remarkable. So what I wanted to do more broadly was not just to anger people in Wisconsin and Minnesota by comparing the two states, but to really look at how different these two states are that are virtually identical in so many different ways, mm-hmm. how different they are now when it comes to voting rights. They have virtually identical electoral systems before 2011. There are states that have had election day registration since the 1970s. There are states that have had the highest voter turnout consistently in presidential elections for decades. And they share a lot of common traits when it comes to demographics and high turnout and civic participation and those kind of things. But Minnesota has diverged remarkably from Wisconsin, because while Wisconsin has passed all of these new voting restrictions, not just voter ID, but cutting early voting, making it harder to register to vote, all of these things, Minnesota has done the opposite. And Minnesota defeated a similar voter ID ballot initiative in 2012. And everyone says, well, what's the big deal about voter ID? Doesn't everyone have an ID? Isn't this overwhelmingly popular? And Minnesota was a really interesting case study, because when this ballot initiative was introduced, it was polling, as you mentioned earlier, with 80%
yes.
support. It was popular among everybody. Even 64% of Democrats supported the voter ID law, and it was viewed as a common sense mm-hmm. solution to the problem of voter fraud. And what happened in Minnesota is there was a very aggressive campaign against it. They talked about the cost. This would cost millions of dollars. They talked about the fact that this would endanger very popular programs like Election Day registration. They talked about the fact that this would hurt rural voters. They talked about the fact that it wouldn't just hurt students and minority voters, but it would hurt seniors and members of the military. There were ads by Iraq war veterans denouncing the bill because you could not vote with a military ID. There were ads with both the Democratic governor at the time, Mark Dayton, and previous Republican governors denouncing the bill. So there was an element of bipartisanship that denounced this that does not exist in a place like Wisconsin. And the net effect was, in 2012, this ballot initiative was defeated with 54%, which was larger than Barack Obama's margin of victory in the state. And it proved that there is not necessarily a political constituency for restricting voting rights, that when you can make an argument, a detailed argument against voter ID laws, it's possible to win, and that states like Minnesota that have a long tradition of protecting voting rights can still do so today.
You go on to say 54% of Minnesotans oppose voter ID. There's no way Minnesota would have made advances if voter ID had passed. Expanding public health care, raising the minimum wage, banning the criminal history box for job applicants, raising taxes in a progressive way, they would not have happened. How do you know?
Well, that is what Dan McGrath, who is the executive director of Take Action Minnesota, which led the fight against this voter ID initiative, told me. And basically, his argument was that those people that would have been most impacted by the voter ID law, particularly lower-income people, people of color, that if this voter ID law would have passed, their political voice would have been marginalized and silenced, and therefore they would not have been able to push for all of these other progressive changes. And so their feeling was that you had to connect the struggle over voting rights to broader issues. You couldn't just talk about voting for voting's sake. You had to talk about how the right to vote relates to all of these other issues that people care about, whether it's economic justice or racial justice or all of these other things. And they were able to successfully do that in Minnesota. So they weren't just arguing about voter fraud, for example. They weren't just arguing about voter disenfranchisement. They were basically saying that this law would lead to all of these other changes beyond voting that would have a negative impact on the lives of Minnesotans.
Do you have any idea, Ari, here we are with, as you remind us, the first presidential election in 50 years in which voters can't rely on the full protections of the Voting Rights Act. We have restrictions. We have lots of different, you know, availability to the ballot box, how easy it is to vote, and it varies by state to state, usually along Democratic and Republican lines, who controls the state. But I'm wondering, do you have a sense of how that's going to play out? Or are these stories that you just can't report because you don't know how many people will be discouraged from voting because it's hard to vote?
Well, we're starting to see it play out today. We're starting to see it play out right now because, as you mentioned, this is the first presidential election in 50 years without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act. And many of these laws are in place for the first time in 2016. So 17 states have new voting restrictions in place, whether that's making it harder to register to vote or cutting back on the amount of time that people have to vote or requiring strict forms of ID to be able to vote that you didn't need previously. And we're seeing the impact, whether it was in Wisconsin in the primary or whether it was in Arizona, where in Maricopa County, which is home to Phoenix, they eliminated 70% of polling places during the primary, and there were five-hour lines
problems.
As a result.
Yeah.
They had problems. We saw problems in New York City, which was previously covered under the Voting Rights Act, where they did a huge voter purge in Brooklyn. We saw problems in North Carolina that had a new voter ID law in effect, and people were turned away from the polls there, and there were a lot of confusion. So we're seeing the problems, and Wisconsin is one of these states that hasn't had these problems. Wisconsin has often been a model for the rest of the country when it comes to voting rights. So when we see people being turned away because they don't have the right photo ID, longtime voters, when we see students in places like Milwaukee wait 2 to 3 hours to vote, these are things that are not customary in Wisconsin. And I think if it happens in Wisconsin, it's very problematic because Wisconsin is supposed to be a leader when it comes to voting rights, not one of the states that has the same kind of problems that we associate with places like Florida in past elections.
You use the phrase, which was used to sell this all over the country. I remember the phrase here in Wisconsin. It was said over and over, common sense voter ID. It's common sense and voter fraud was used, but usually it was just a common sense reform. We need to be reminded, I think, of how problematic voter fraud is in Wisconsin and in the rest of the country. Is it a problem?
It isn't a problem in Wisconsin. I think it's been a manufactured controversy. Wisconsin, in a federal trial, didn't present a single case of voter impersonation in the state. They couldn't find one single case of someone who showed up and impersonated another voter because it's incredibly rare. It's an incredibly stupid way to try to steal an election, and it's just not happening in Wisconsin. But what we are seeing is that there are lots of people that are having problems with this law. According to federal trials, 300,000 registered voters in Wisconsin, which is about 9% of the electorate, don't have a government-issued ID. Even if you assume that people are able to get those IDs, there are still people that are falling through the cracks. There are still stories that I told earlier of people like Eddie Lee Holloway Jr. who have voted without problems but are being turned away from the polls. There are also stories of people that are jumping through many, many hoops to be able to get an ID. I was in Milwaukee in April with a voter by the name of Dennis Hatton. He was a Marine who was formerly homeless. He had moved from Illinois to Wisconsin, and again, he had voted without problems, and it took him 6 months to be able to get a photo ID for voting because he had issues with his birth certificate. He was born to a midwife in Arkansas, formerly Jim Crow State, where they did not have really reliable records at the time because he was not born in a hospital. And so there are a lot of people that are having issues here, and I think just to sweep it under the rug is to really ignore reality.
Ari Berman is our guest this hour. His piece is in The Nation. He's also written a book about these voting issues. The piece is The GOP's War on Voting is Working. Wisconsin and Minnesota are case studies in the differences between Republican and Democratic rule. And his latest book is Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Here is our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. You fall probably on one side or the other, although you may be open to persuasion, as was the case in Minnesota. But if you're in favor of voter ID, what makes you in favor of it? If you have concerns about it, or if you've had problems voting, we certainly would like to hear from you as well. And there go the phones. So we're going to have a lot of calls. Just keep the number in mind, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Voting in America, this hour of the show with Ari Berman, and we go to Brian in Marinette for our first call. Ari, hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I was calling because isn't there a provision in one of the Civil War amendments that if a state denies its citizens the right to vote, that they can lose representation in Congress? Why isn't someone doing something with that?
Ari?
That's a very good point that Brian made. This is actually in the 14th Amendment. And what it said was that if states don't comply with federal voting rights, their representation in terms of Congress can be reduced. Now, this has never been used, but it's an interesting aspect of the 14th Amendment that is on the books. Wisconsin is one of those states that hasn't had the same problems with voting rights that other states have had. So I've been reporting on lots of states like Texas or North Carolina or Alabama that have had long histories of infractions with the Voting Rights Act. And Wisconsin has not, until recently, been one of these states. And so really the federal government hasn't had to pay a whole lot of attention to Wisconsin because there has been high turnout, because there has been high participation. Only recently have these laws been passed, really since 2011. And only recently has Wisconsin become the kind of lightning rod for voting rights that states in the South have long experienced.
And Ari, where do we stand with Supreme Court hearings on all of these? There are many challenges among many states. Where does all of that stand?
So a lot of cases are working their way through the pipeline. What the Supreme Court said was that those states with the longest histories of discrimination no longer have to approve their voting changes with the federal government. But there are other parts of the Voting Rights Act that are still being used. And those are being used to challenge laws in places like Texas and North Carolina, and those are before appeals courts, and so we're waiting to see the judgments there, and then this is going to possibly go before the Supreme Court, although who knows with the court divided 4-4 what they'll be able to do at the moment. Wisconsin's voter ID law was upheld by a very conservative panel of judges on the Court of Appeals. The Supreme Court declined to hear that case. However, there's a separate trial, not just challenging the voter ID laws, but challenging some of these other restrictions that didn't get as much attention, things like eliminating early voting and nights and weekends and making it harder to register to vote and making it harder to cast absentee ballots. And those are now before a federal judge, and the federal judge has seemed quite skeptical of them, and he's expected to rule sometime this month. So a lot of things are now before the courts, and there's a lot of uncertainty. People don't really know what the laws are, and right now they're just having to adapt to the system that exists, even if it's an imperfect and flawed system.
So if that federal judge struck down some aspects of our voter changes, they would be changed with not a likelihood that the Supreme Court would take this up before November, right?
Yeah, and it's unlikely what would happen if a separate judge struck down the voter ID law, which had just been upheld by the federal appeals court. So it remains to be seen what's going to happen. But the fact is, any decisions by lower courts on these issues are likely to be appealed, and we just don't know what's going to happen with the Supreme Court. The fact that it is divided 4-4 means that in a lot of cases, the Court of Appeals rather than the Supreme Court could be the last word on these issues. But this is stuff that's still playing out 4 months before the election.
Right. Brian, thanks for your call. Jeremy and Racine, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
When they're going to the DMV, they're not getting any voter ID. They're getting a state ID, correct?
They're getting a state ID for voting.
You're right. So the problems and the difficulties that people are going through has nothing really necessarily to do with the law itself. It's the bureaucracy of the DMV and how they handle issuing a basic state ID. If they're requiring them to have so many different types of identification, then maybe we shouldn't be looking at the law. Maybe we should be looking at the process at the DMV. And secondly, like that gentleman from Illinois that moved up from Illinois to Wisconsin, I believe in Wisconsin you have 6 weeks to update your ID after you move to your new residency, whether within the state or coming to the state. So where does a citizen's responsibility to do what he's needed to be doing in the first place, long before waiting till he has to vote to try to accomplish all this stuff?
Well, I think I would respond to the first point by basically saying that when the law was passed, those people that were supporting it were fully aware of the problems with the bureaucracy at the DMV. It was very obvious that these kind of problems were going to occur, and some might argue that that is, in fact, a natural result of this kind of law being passed, that now the DMV, a big federal bureaucracy that people don't like, is now the arbiter of who does and doesn't get to vote in a way that it wasn't before in Wisconsin. The second thing is that I think, you know, people have alternative forms of ID that they can use in society that are acceptable in lots of different ways but may not be acceptable for voting. I'll give you one example. Student ID cards from public universities like the University of Wisconsin are not acceptable IDs to be able to vote. So you can use that student ID for a lot of things, but you can't use it to vote because of the way the legislature wrote that law. And so that's an example of, I think, where this gets a little bit trickier. Why, for example, are public university IDs, which are government-issued IDs, not accepted when all sorts of other government-issued IDs are accepted? And those are some of the concerns that people have about this law.
And I know there are places we've heard from people who've been trying to get that ID in some rural areas and have found that the DMV is really far from home. If you don't have a car, how are you going to go there?
Well, and the DMV also has extremely limited hours in many places in Wisconsin.
One day a week in some places.
There's one city in Wisconsin, I believe it's Sauk City, Wisconsin, that the DMV is only open 5 Wednesdays a year. So if you don't have a driver's license, and presumably you're having to rely on public transportation or on a ride to get somewhere, and then you live in a county where the DMV is only open 5 Wednesdays a year, you have a real problem. So what we're seeing is that people who don't have a car, who don't have a driver's license, who are functioning in society but just don't have these basic things, they run into a lot of problems when it comes to a state that has, in many ways, very limited DMV hours. And then when you go to the DMV, they're making you jump through all these hoops to be able to get the ID that you need for voting. And this was something that you never needed before in any previous election in Wisconsin, and there were really no problems before this.
Mm-hmm. We did a show prior to April 5 about what you're going to need to register to vote, because you can register on the day of the election in this state, which who knows how long that will last, but you could still do that. And I was amazed. Everybody, including me, and I'm sort of on top of these issues, has some very basic questions about this, and there wasn't really any educational effort in the state of Wisconsin to inform all of the citizens as to what it meant for voting. And I know there's been a change in the Government Ethics Board here. I'm wondering if there has been money set aside for education. What kind of education are we going to get in Wisconsin before November?
Well, this is a really big issue. The voter ID law, as it was written, required a public education campaign, but when the Government Accountability Board asked for $250,000, they were initially turned down by the state, and only recently has this money been allocated. And not only that, but then the long-time, nonpartisan, respected group that oversaw Wisconsin elections and was supposed to educate the public has just been dismantled. And so now there's a whole new group that's going to be overseen by political appointees that's now supposed to educate the public. So the confusion is a really big worry here. There are people that just can't comply with the law, but there's a lot of people that just don't understand what the law is. When I was in Wisconsin on the April 5th primary, I saw this all over the place, that students didn't realize that they couldn't vote with their student ID cards. They had to get a separate ID to be able to vote. People had to make multiple trips to the polls. Some people showed up and were turned away. There was so much confusion in a state like Wisconsin, as I mentioned earlier, has been really one of the national leaders on voting rights up until this time.
So is that going to be rectified before November? Do you know?
I think they're trying to educate as many people as they can, but I think there are going to be problems in November. Not only do we have this new voter ID law, but as I mentioned earlier, there's been all of these other changes to early voting, to voter registration, to absentee ballots that are impacting voters too. It's great that Wisconsin still has Election Day registration because it gives people, in some cases, the ability to rectify these problems. And states that have Election Day registration have voter turnouts of up to 10% higher than states that don't. And when I looked at why Wisconsin and Minnesota have had such high voter turnouts consistently since the 1970s, the number one reason among all others is Election Day registration. This really does work. And I saw this when I was at Marquette on April 5th, because there were hundreds of students that were in line to register and then vote. And if they didn't have Election Day registration there, well, yes, some of those people would have been able to register previously, but a lot of them would not have registered and would not have voted. So this is a huge reform that luckily has not been eliminated, but no doubt there are some Republicans in the legislature that would like to eliminate Election Day registration next.
Bob sends this message on Facebook. I was a poll worker in the Milwaukee area in the last election. I saw firsthand the hardship the law causes the poor, and especially the disabled and elderly, because of the difficulty of correcting clerical errors on forms and records that you already have talked about. I had to deny at least 5 people their vote because they didn't have time or resources, transportation, to run to the DMV to get an ID, even if their name was listed in my poll book.
That's a really, really good point that the writer mentioned. There are people who are lower income, that don't have resources. There are people that are disabled. There are people that are elderly that can't afford, either physically or from an economic perspective, to make multiple trips to the DMV, to be able to amend their birth certificate, to be able to go through all of these hoops. And I saw this. I saw that there were disabled veterans that couldn't vote, and elderly people who couldn't be able to vote. One of the lead plaintiffs in the challenge to Wisconsin's voter ID law, Ruthelle Frank, had been voting since 1948 without any sort of problems before this voter ID law was passed, but she's also someone who never had a birth certificate. And so she now can't vote because of this law. And so I think we really need to be asking ourselves, why are we creating a situation where people that have voted without problems since the 1940s are now suddenly disenfranchised by the law when there's no evidence of voter fraud that a law of this type would stop?
Thanks, Jeremy, for the call. Ed in Park Falls. Hi.
Hi. Hey, I just have two things to say here. Number one, we have to remember that when people are voting, they're voting for our leadership. So if they can't figure out how to get a free identification provided by the government, you really need to wonder if we want them selecting our leaders. That seems to be rather harsh, but at the same time, I would like someone to be able to at least how to figure out how to get a free identification that our tax dollars are paying for. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I'm pretty sure that your guest is accurately reflecting what the former Marine told him about not having a birth certificate, but I just retired from the military myself, and I'm telling you that that is patently false. In order to join the United States military, you have to have a birth certificate. So whatever he told you about that is just an untruth. And I think that a lot of these stories and these vignettes are they're looked at from a very sympathetic and liberal point of view, and they don't really reflect a broad swath of the population.
Why is it that
he couldn't have five people vote? They should not be disenfranchised, but at the same time, if people can't have enough wherewithal in order to think ahead enough to get these free identification cards, we really want to think, are these the folks that we want selecting our?
Yeah, I mean, it's a right. As a citizen of the United States, why would you want to disenfranchise people who are eligible to vote, Ed?
No, I would not want to disenfranchise them, but I would also like them to be able to think far enough ahead. Like these students that are in line, if they didn't realize that the identification requirements have changed at Marquette, these are college students. We expect them to be learning. They couldn't take 5 minutes out of their study day to look up the law on the internet.
It was not publicized, though, in the state is the problem. People didn't know. Very educated people didn't know because there were nobody had it in a place where everybody knew where to get it. There were no television ads or radio ads or go to this site and make sure that you know how the law has changed. There was confusion over that, too, wasn't there?
Well, not that I'm aware of. I mean, I got on the internet and I registered to vote. It took me about 10 minutes. So my point being is that we have to understand and remember that these people are selecting our leaders that are going to take us to war, for instance, or to start levying more taxes on us, making decisions about regulations that are going to affect my farm, for instance. So I would like a little bit, I would like an educated voter base, and if it's something as basic as getting a free identification card that is provided by tax dollars.
Well, it isn't free to a lot of people is part of the problem if you've been listening to the show. Ari?
Well, yeah, the problem is that people are having to jump through lots of different hoops that for no fault of their own, if someone has a birth certificate that a name is misspelled on, for example, or they never had a birth certificate, they're having to spend hundreds of dollars. They're visiting multiple public agencies. They're spending lots of time and resources, and they're still not being able to vote. And these are people that are spending lots of time. As I mentioned, there was someone who made seven trips to two different states to try to get an ID for voting and was not able to. So I think obviously not everyone is having these kinds of problems. 90% of Wisconsinites have an ID, but for those that don't have a government-issued ID, there are real problems here. And the thing I would say more broadly is that throughout American history, there has always been a way to rationalize making it harder to vote. There were always people that supported things like literacy tests and poll taxes during Jim Crow and said that they, too, didn't want uneducated people voting. And that was a way for many, many years that white segregationists were able to justify the disenfranchisement of African Americans in states like Alabama and Mississippi. And so I think the fact that we do have this very unfortunate history of disenfranchising people, I think, makes us need to be particularly sensitive about why we're disenfranchising people today and whether there's a good reason to do so. What I'm saying is that there is no evidence of voter fraud to justify these new restrictions, that we could make the law less restrictive, that states like Wisconsin did not have problems that necessitated these kind of new laws, and that people are having to jump through lots of different hoops as a result to be able to vote, and some people are not able to vote as a result. And these are educated people that are trying to understand the political process but are getting caught in one form of a problem or another.
And what about needing a birth certificate to get into the military?
Well, the story that I was telling, I didn't tell it in great detail, but the fact is that this was a guy who had a birth certificate, but the problem is that he had problems retrieving it. And so I think there are lots of different issues that people are going through. And I think the fact is you have people that have voted all their lives that never had any problems, that why should they need their birth certificate to be able to vote? They never needed their birth certificate previously. This is nowhere in the Constitution does it say you need to have a birth certificate to be able to vote. And so I think we're erecting new reasons to try to turn people away from the polls as opposed to saying, well, why did you need these things in the first place? There was no voter fraud. There were no problems in Wisconsin that necessitated changing the law.
Well, and that's what you have to go back to. Why change the law if there weren't any problems? I mean, you have to look at why, if you're saying fraud was the problem, and you couldn't find, I think Todd Alba did a study because Dale Schultz asked him to and found two or three cases of voter impersonation, which this bill would take care of. And interestingly enough, two of the people were Republicans. But it's just simply not a huge problem. So why go through all of this if there aren't political ideas behind the whole thing? It's hard. Maybe somebody can call and give me another reason here. But why do all of this if the reason is it to keep people from voting? Why would you want to do that?
Well,
are there political reasons?
What Dale Schultz, the former member of the legislature, told his chief of staff, Todd Alba, is find me three cases of voter fraud to support these new restrictions. And Schultz, Alba could only find two cases of alleged double voting. One, ironically, was the wife of Speaker of the House, Robin Voss, and the other was a Republican staffer. Neither case was prosecuted, and they were both cases of double voting that would not have been even solved by a voter ID law because they happened at two different locations. And so basically what Schultz concluded, what Alba concluded, was this was politically motivated, that Republicans behind closed doors, that people like Glenn Grothman publicly said these laws are being passed to try to give us a political advantage, to, in the words of Republican members of the legislature, to target neighborhoods in Milwaukee, to target college campuses, to target voters of color, to target student voters, and try to get some sort of advantage because Republicans had been losing close elections in Wisconsin, particularly on the presidential level in 2000 and 2004. They've been losing very close elections. They blamed that on high turnout in places like Milwaukee, and they viewed the voter ID law as a political solution to that problem because they knew full well there was no evidence of voter fraud in the state, or else Wisconsin would have presented that evidence of voter impersonation at a federal trial, which would be the exact point in time when you would present that evidence if you had it.
Thanks for the call. David in Monroe, hi.
Hi, thank you so much. I wanted to respond to your host, your comment, Ms. Dunn, that we always heard Scott Walker with a poker face and a flat affect saying, common sense reform, common sense, common sense, common sense. And the main example was if you have to show an ID to get onto an airplane, why not show an ID if
right.
you go down to the schoolhouse and vote? Here's the distinction. If you go onto an airplane, you had to show an ID because, unfortunately, some people could commit a crime and blow up an airplane or take people hostage on an airplane. However, to vote is a fundamental constitutional right. It's a fundamental constitutional right, whereas flying on an airplane is not a constitutional fundamental right. It's a privilege to get on the airplane to fly. Voting is a fundamental constitutional right. So all these right-wing Republicans talk about the Constitution ignore it when it's convenient, namely when they're trying to make people who will vote Democratic not get to the poll. And that's exactly Scott Walker, Robin Voss, Grossman, the whole bunch of them were trying to do. And they were willing to throw overboard, unfortunately, some veterans and some elderly, including my very, very right-wing Republican elderly in-laws who are now having a very difficult time getting their ID because they no longer drive. So the reason behind it all was to try to suppress the vote to gain an electoral advantage. That was the only thing. It was absolute lies by Scott Walker. But mainly, the common sense reform, it's different from flying on an airplane, the example, because it's a fundamental constitutional mm-hmm. right. And your farmer friend, I would propose that he's probably an uneducated voter because he probably listens to Fox 10 News, and I would hope that he would take a drug test.
All right. Yeah. All right, we don't know what he watches on TV, but thank you very much for your call. Well, go ahead, Ari.
Well, I think the caller makes a good point about the distinction between voting and flying. I would also say that you can fly with lots of different IDs. If you don't have a government-issued ID with you, you can get an exception for flying. Also, there are different ways to get places. If you don't fly, you can drive. You can get a ride. You can take a bus. But there's only one way to vote. There are no alternatives to voting. And we do not have a history in this country of suppressing people from flying. But we have a very, very long history in this country of suppressing people from voting. And so I think voting is unlike other things in society. I don't think voting is like buying liquor. I don't think voting is like flying. I think it is a basic fundamental right that we have restricted in this country for far too long. And if we're going to restrict it currently, we have to have a very, very, very good reason to do so, or else we should not do it because of our country's unfortunate history of making it harder to vote for certain people for such a long time.
Well, maybe that's the problem. People don't understand the history of this country. People died for the right to vote, for heaven's sake. Women died for the right to vote. African Americans died for the right to vote in America, for heaven's sake.
I think that people don't understand this history. They don't remember that people like Congressman John Lewis, for example, were beaten nearly to death just 50 years ago, marching, trying to register to vote in Selma, Alabama. They don't remember that when this country was founded in 1776, when the Constitution was ratified in Philadelphia, only white male property owners could vote, that we have an unfortunate history of restricting the franchise for so many years. And it's only been recently that everyone has been able to vote. It's only been since the passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965 that we made a commitment as a society that everyone should be able to cast a ballot, regardless of where they live, what they look like, or who they are. And I think it's particularly unfortunate, I mentioned this earlier, that a state like Wisconsin that has been a leader in voting rights, that has had the highest turnout, that's had a culture of civic participation, that has had laws like Election Day registration, for Wisconsin to do this is a step backwards, not just for Wisconsin, but for the rest of the country, because Wisconsin is supposed to be a leader when it comes to voting rights.
David, thanks very much for your call. We'll take more in just a moment. Ari Berman is our guest. The GOP's war on voting is working. Wisconsin and Minnesota are case studies in the difference between Republican and Democratic rule, the title of his latest piece in The Nation. Ari is also an author, and his latest book is Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to Margie in Milwaukee next. Hi, Margie.
Hi. Good topic, and it's frustrating for me to listen to all this, because when it all started, I felt like the litmus test for why this bill was coming to be was, okay, if they're going to restrict or make it more difficult to vote, if they're making it so important that you have to prove the residency to vote, then why doesn't it also go along that they bend over backwards to help people get the cards? And the fact that they invoked this at the same time that they closed DMV locations and they changed voting times. And why is it so hard to figure out the motive behind this? And they kept using the term, it's common sense. You just need common sense to get this. Well, common sense is you don't fix something that's not broken. And there was no proof of fraud. So why, common sense would say, why are you doing this? Just like in Texas, when the Supreme Court ruled on the abortion issue, And the verdict was, you can't prove that it's necessary for women to have to be have a hospital admission availability. And this looks like it was set up to discourage abortion rather than support it.
Ari.
Well, that's a really good question. That's a really good comment by the caller. And I wish that the Supreme Court's standard in the abortion case, which is basically show us that this benefits women's health or we're not going to allow you to do this, was also used for voting rights. Show us that this is going to actually help the public rather than disenfranchise people, or else you shouldn't be able to do this. And we've seen these problems with people obtaining IDs not just in Wisconsin. In Alabama, for example, they passed a strict voter ID law. Then they shut down DMV offices where people would obtain these IDs in black counties all across the state. In Texas, another state that has a strict voter ID law, a third of counties in Texas don't even have a DMV office. It's a situation not unlike what's happening in parts of Wisconsin. So if you require this, but then you don't allow people to actually get the requirement, you're creating a situation in which people are bound to be disenfranchised. And in other countries, what they do is they give everyone a national ID card. So everyone who's born has a national ID card, and that solves that problem. What we're doing instead in Wisconsin is we're saying, hey, you need to have this ID to vote. But now we're going to have very limited hours at the DMV. We're not going to fund the agency that's supposed to educate the public. Not only are we not going to fund it, we're going to dismantle that agency altogether. So there's no longer an independent watchdog holding the legislature accountable and educating the public. And so it's a very, very, very cynical in terms of why this was done. And like I said earlier, behind closed doors, Republicans were arguing that they were doing this to try to benefit their party politically. And when it came time in court for them to present the evidence of why this law was necessary, they were unable to. And I think it's really, really unfortunate that this is happening, because the right to vote, in my opinion, should not be a partisan issue. And the whole reason why I decided to write this comparison of Wisconsin and Minnesota was because I was disturbed by the fact that it's becoming easier to vote in Democratic states and harder to vote in Republican states. I think that's fundamentally bad for democracy. I don't think it should be easy to vote in a state like Oregon and harder to vote in a state like Texas or in Wisconsin and Minnesota. I think that we as a country should have a commitment to making it easy for everybody to vote, particularly in states like Wisconsin that have a tradition of making it easier to vote in very high voter turnout.
How do you, Ari, explain the fact that until there was a massive education effort, 64% of Democrats in Minnesota thought voter ID was a good idea?
Well, I think the fact is there is a lot of common sense to it. I think that people think, number one, that everyone has an ID, so what's the big deal? And number two, if they don't have one, they can get one. And only when you start talking about the costs here, when you start talking about the people that could be disenfranchised, when you start talking about the hoops that voters will have to jump through, do people's minds start to change? And even so, it's true that, well, 90% of the public has usually a voter ID, and so it's difficult to convince a majority to be against something when most people will have it. And I think the Minnesota example is instructive. The fact that they were able to defeat something that had 80% support initially is really remarkable, and it shows that minds can be changed. But what happened is in Minnesota, it wasn't just all about partisanship, that Republicans were able to change their minds, independents were able to change their minds, Democrats definitely changed their minds, and Republicans in Wisconsin, this has really fallen along partisan lines, that Republicans by and large support these things and Democrats by and large oppose them. And I wish we could have some more consensus on why are we making it harder to vote. Shouldn't we be supporting things like Election Day registration that we know that work, that make it easier to vote?
Margie, thanks. We have about a minute left, everybody. Let's try and get two calls in quickly. Mary in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. I bet you if it was this difficult and people had to jump through these kind of hoops to get concealed carry permits, it would be fixed in a heartbeat. I mean, the Republicans seem to have all these great things about gun rights, but they think voter rights are something people shouldn't have. I don't get it.
Ari.
Very good point.
Thanks, Mary, for the call. Orel, is it, in Rhinelander? Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment. The young man that called and said you had to show a birth certificate in order to get into the armed services. Uh-huh. That isn't true. I was in service, and I never showed my birth certificate, and several other people didn't. I was 40 years old before ever I used my birth certificate, and when I did get it, it had the wrong name on it. Hmm. So it does happen.
Thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate the caller for clarifying that. And again, but like I said earlier, you never needed a birth certificate or anything like that to be able to vote in Wisconsin previously. So the fact that people are having to provide these things, they're having to pay lots of money for them, they're having to travel long distances to obtain them, to me is totally ridiculous.
Ari, thank you very much for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Kathleen. I really appreciate it.
Ari Berman, senior contributing writer for The Nation, our guest this hour. He is the author of several books. His latest is Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. He writes extensively about American politics, about the intersection of money and politics, civil rights. Stories have appeared in the New York Times, Rolling Stone, The Guardian. His first book was Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics, published a few years back. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing the hour and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. If you didn't get on the air and you can get to Facebook, we love to read your comments on all of these issues because people have different viewpoints and points of view that we and ideas that we just didn't get to during the conversation. The Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Toys for girls and boys, toys for everybody. Hour two of our program.